Okay, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon. We want to welcome you to meeting number two of the Five Classroom Book Club. Today we are discussing Chapter 3. My name is Ben Curran, and I'm a co-founder of EngagingEducators.com. We are a small educational consulting company, and we're helping Vicki and Julie moderate the book club. Today, when we discuss Chapter 3, we'll be talking all about connections, and we hope that you will join in to the discussion, either in the chat or via audio. When the mic is available, all you've got to do is press the talk button up here in the upper left-hand corner underneath my picture. We'll also be doing some polls to vote in a poll. In the participants menu, there's an icon with a check mark in it. You can vote yes or no there. And if you ever need to ask a question, you can click the second icon from the right to raise your hand, and we'll make sure that you are able to join in. You also might want to take a second here and go to the tools menu and check your audio. We do have several folks with us, and we do have an author. The book, one of the co-authors, Vicki Davis. Vicki, was there anything you wanted to say to folks this morning?
I'm just glad you could make it. And as we talk about Chapter 3, you know, this is the struggle. This is about connecting yourself and then connecting to your school and connecting to your students. And, you know, it's actually one of the longer chapters in the book. Because there's so many different ways to connect yourself. But I think the thing I would really encourage all of you to think about is to realize that you should focus, you know, everything from your cell phone home screen, your iPad home screen, your computer home screen, to help you be more productive and have that kind of habits that will make you a lifelong learner. I read the other day that 95% of what you accomplish is through your habits. That's from Brian Tracy. And so connecting is a habit. It's part of what we do. And a lot of us struggle, for example, with checking email when we start getting a lot of email and getting really connected. But I think this is a really important chapter, and I'm looking forward to learning some of the ideas that those of you in the room have about how do you connect with others and how do we encourage teachers who are getting into global collaboration to connect. Thanks.
Yeah, it is such an important chapter. And that was one of the things I was looking forward to as well today, is hearing from participants, what are you doing to connect, what do you do to be successful in that area, what are some tips that you have to share with the world, with your colleagues, and also what questions do you have, how can we help you connect? How can we help you take this step? It's such a huge part of being an educator in the 21st century, and we want to be a part of that network to help you do that. We would like to have a check-in now. We have some participants here. I'm very curious to know where everybody's from. The most exciting part about this book club for me is that it's a global event. You're able to point to a place on the map using the icons along the side. So if you could check in, let us know where you're from Detroit, So I'm going to check in there. Now again, it's the second button down on your whiteboard tools. If you click it, it'll change the icon. And I like the little star. And you can just check in, and we can see where everybody's from. That would be great. I had one on Detroit there. Welcome to everybody, and again, we would hope that you will contribute in the chat room with questions or comments. We'd also love to hear your voices morning / afternoon, evening. Raise your hand if you ever do want to take the mic, and welcome to our friends here in the States and around the world. Also would like to take a quick poll so we can practice our polling, because I am curious to get some answers about some of the self-assessment questions here in a bit. Could you just check yes if you are a classroom teacher? And again, that's in the check box there. Pull down classroom teachers. Okay. And what about, do we have administrators? People working in administration role? Excellent. We'd love to hear comments from folks in both roles. I think it's important to get everybody in on those discussions. So that's how the polling works, and that's how we'll lead it through. I'm doing a little too much talking here, so we want to hand it over to you guys in a minute. We did have some guests who are quoted in the book scheduled to appear, so hopefully they'll join us and we'll be able to ask them some questions. But I first wanted to turn our conversation to the self-assessment on page 43. Hopefully you had a chance to take a look at that, because I think it gives a great overview of what we're sort of looking for in this chapter on connection. Was there anyone here who did take that and who found anything out about themselves from that that they would like to share? I encourage you to take the mic and maybe pick one of those questions and talk to us about your reaction to that. Again, if you're joining us, we are discussing the self-assessment on connections on page 43. And there was one that I found I was very curious about. The number two, when I'm researching a topic, I can usually, I'm wondering what are some of the research tools that folks are using out there. I think it's referred to as a push learning activity in the book. What are some of the research tools you're using?
I was just going to mention that one thing that I've started using a lot is a website called Hashtags to try to find the hashtags around a topic, to kind of find the people around the topic. And this is something I teach my students to do when they get into a topic as well, is to find the hashtag. about around that topic when you're getting ready to dig into it. So I know that's probably a little bit deeper, but it's kind of an area that I think is important. Can students and can we find conversations and the people having those conversations?
I think that's going to be sort of an emerging way to search now is through sort of alternate means, and that is a great tip. And for example, I mean, if you were looking for conversations around global ed, I know just in the chat room came up the global ed hashtag or the flat class hashtag are two great ones for finding things out. As sort of like alternatives to Google, I think someone mentioned DIGO also. I think that DIGO is an underutilized search engine because when you're searching DIGO, you're searching people's bookmarks, things that people think are important. So I'd encourage you to use the search feature of Google. What about some of the poll technologies that you're using? What are you using to get that learning delivered straight to you? Are you using, the iPad and apps like that? Are you using an RSS reader? Is Twitter something you're using a lot? Talk to us about that. Does anybody have a favorite tool for pulling information to them? And we're getting some great suggestions here in the chat room. Is there anybody who'd like to talk about one of theirs, favorite tools here? Go ahead and take the mic.
Hi, this is Ken Jones. I hope you can hear me. I use a variety of things. One is Google Reader, but to be quite honest, I don't look at it as much as I can. I've been trying to get back into checking, Twitter very often during the day. Again, there's a time. What I use is for sort of keep up with my PLN is a variety of Symbaloo grids to where I can get to very quickly and check blog posts and things like that. I hope that helps.
Yes, that does help quite a bit. For folks that aren't too familiar with Symbaloo, could you talk to us maybe a little bit more, if you don't mind, Kenneth, about how you use that, what it is, what it does for you?
Now, Symbaloo is just a grid, actually. It's a number of, you can have as many different grids by subject as you want, and it's just a place to keep sites. There's also, you can grid your RSS feeds the same way that you would just a group of websites that are called tiles, but the reason that I like it is for example, I put things for the flat classroom on a separate grid. So that includes, a lot of the global network blogs and things like that I put there. So when I have a moment and I'm thinking about that subject, I go to that grid and I just sort of can very quickly go through and check. A reader, an RSS reader, does really probably even better because it has specific blog posts and things. I just find that during the day for me, it's just easier to have those things in one area where I can just sort of go look and see the actual websites. I have, my problem is selectivity with and I don't with the reader. I have too much on there, and I need to always learn how to sort of thin it out. But it's just a common place to keep things, and I like kids to be able to use those where they can sort of section off their curricular topics. Thanks.
Thank you very, very much, Kenneth. That's appreciative. We really appreciate that. I mean, and Symbaloo is a pretty unique and visual appealing tool. I think getting all those sites in one place, again, works as a great push tool. I'm curious, though, to focus in on the pull technologies folks are using. One of the things that I struggle with working with teachers is getting them to use these pull technologies regularly, and I'm wondering what the barriers are, I guess. Kenneth mentions you know, not being able to get into the Google Reader. I'm a Google Reader addict myself. So how are you pulling information to you? And again, if you're not familiar with the pull, it's sort of featured as a key part of connecting, is bringing this learning to you. And in the book, we look at page 36, where it discusses some different ways. So I'm curious how you're doing it. And I think somebody mentioned a screenshot on page 38. Is there anybody that can talk about pull?
This is Vicki. I'm just going to interject here. One thing is, if you want to check your mics, everybody, Tools Audio Setup Wizard, then you'll be ready to go when it's time to talk. But, you know, I think that, to me, the big point is being intentional about it. You know, once a month, I don't know, how often do you guys look through and kind of prune your media diet and say, okay, this is what I intentionally want to look at? Because you know, it's so important not to just, you know, we've got this fire hose of information coming towards us, so we want to make sure that we have the right information coming. I know, for example, some of the most useful feeds I have come from Google Alerts, or you can actually go to Google Blog Search. I do Google Blog Search for current education research. Cool tool. I mean, there's some searches you can do, and those tend to give me my best information. Also, Google News Search. So you can actually segment all of the news sources by using news.google.com or by using Google Blog Search and set that up. Because here's the one thing that really bothers me about Zeit and sometimes Flipboard, but in particular Zeit, is that you start seeing so much come through Zeit, and we don't know the algorithms that put things on Zeit's radar. I mean, I've had Zeit put a blog post of mine up 4 months afterwards, so the thing is, if everybody's only reading Zeit, then are we really getting all the information that's out there? Are we really getting the most important information? Are we letting somebody use some hidden algorithm to decide what we should read? You know, and then it's just like another newspaper. So, and then the other thing about Zeit is that if it tells us what to read and only gives us what we're interested in, what if we need to read some things that may upset us or that we don't like, and are we going to get that? You know, I think we have to intentionally read people we sometimes disagree with, and is Zeit going to just kind of put us in an echo chamber? I don't know. It's just a question.
And I think that is a great question. I'm a little bit off of my original agenda here, but I'm not too worried about that. I don't think anybody else is going to be, but I want to sort of zoom in on this idea of teacher-learner and why that's so important in the terms of global collaboration, and why is it important to be learning if you are getting involved in global collaboration. And this may be a question for Julie or Vicky, I'm not sure, but I'd love to hear people's thoughts. Why do you need to connect?
Hi everyone, Julie here from Beijing, China. I'll just jump in and say hi. I'm not sure if I've got the ultimate answer to the question, why do we need to connect? But essentially, you know, you need to go beyond your immediate environment. You need to have these cool technologies to bring into your immediate environment these wonderful resources and ideas. You know, someone just said, follow people you don't agree with. Yes, bring in ideas that you don't agree with and mix them up with the ones that you think you agree with at the moment. And your pool technology should be part of your professional development on a daily basis. I think that's so important because we work in closed environments. Well, the face-to-face people you see every day aren't necessarily your best mentors or the best people to help you develop as a professional educator or a professional administrator in a school. That's my two cents. Well, sorry, I was late. I was in traffic on the Beijing freeway. Anyway, thanks. Back to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Julie. And I think that really does capture the importance of it, and I think that there's a reason why this chapter is first in the book, first of the main chapters, rather the first step, because it's something that has to happen. I think too that when we talk about barriers to success in education, the idea of getting teachers to buy into the idea of the work that it takes, it does take work to establish yourself as a teacher learner, not just a teacher. And how do we remove those barriers for teachers? I'm curious to know about people's ideas on that. If this is such an important professional development activity to have your push and your be able to pull information to you, how can we help teachers see how important it is, and how can we remove the barriers that might be there? And again, the barrier that Vicky just mentioned is time. That comes up a lot. How can we help teachers? And again, we'd love to hear directly from you, so please raise your hand and add a comment about how we can help teachers make this part of their routine. Go ahead, Honor. We'd love to hear from you. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. I guess I'm just thinking about my best answer that popped in my head was something about helping shortcut teachers who you're trying to bring into the fold past some of the sort of learning the hard way experiences that you might have had. And I'm going to regret saying this because I think it's valuable to learn the hard way or to do things through trial and error, and it helps you have a greater insight or epiphany when you finally get there. But just as an example for myself, I know, you know, everybody has their Twitter story and an iTunes sign up, and then it was another year probably later before I really got it. And what helped me get it was being at an event where people were using a hashtag and there was a lively conversation, and then it clicked, and from then on I was able to figure out how to really make it work for me instead of me having to work so hard to get it to make sense. So then what I tried to do was just create an opportunity for my colleagues to have that same experience and just shortcut them right to that experience so they wouldn't have to have all the, you know, hours of frustration of trying to do something or use a new tool and it not making sense. And so for my colleagues, I think at the time, part of the things that I did was invite them to participate in what were being held as little, they were called Twitter University. I don't even know if this is still happening. But it was just an event on a certain day with a certain hashtag, and then everybody got on and had a conversation. And of course now there's a jillion, you know, Ed chat and the like. And so it's not as, you know, I think it's not as hard to get into the tool, but I think we have to know what some of the experiences are that'll be really, you know, the watershed moment for people right away, rather than just saying, well, you ought to use Twitter. Like, actually hold their hand and take them to the, give them the full experience, I guess, and then turn them loose, and they'll probably figure it out or come back to you again if they're stuck later.
Thank you so much, Anna. I really appreciate those comments, and I think there's a lot in there to think about. I had another hand from Michael. We'd love to hear from you, Michael. Hi, guys. I'm just going to hop in here and just point out that one thing that we've learned is to try and start bringing teachers in from where they're at. We've found for teachers who aren't very familiar with online networking, they often find Facebook groups and even a Skype group one of the most fascinating and effective ways of communicating and learning from people around the world. Yeah, I think that's a very good point, and you sort of need to think about making it familiar to them, and so the idea of a Facebook group, and if you think about the percentage of people you work with who are on Facebook already, giving them that tool that they're familiar with instead of something new. So I really appreciate that. I think in the book it mentions, you know, just building those habits, 15 minutes a day or 15 minutes a week or what have you. If the Google Reader isn't for you, if that's too overwhelming, think about something like iGoogle to help organize the information that's coming to you. I did want to move forward here and sort of talk about the taxonomy that's mentioned on page 55. This idea that the steps to connecting your class globally, you need to think about that within that figure there, that description of the taxonomy, where are you, at which level are you, and what are some things you've done at each level. I know personally, for me, with my class, probably somewhere between 3 and 4, but there's things along the way that have happened. And I think starting at level 1 is very important. Is there anybody that would like to share where they are, or maybe what steps they took in the beginning at levels 1 or 2? Are there stories that you can share about how did you build those connections at level 1? And if you're not able to look at your book, I'm talking about within your own class or within your own school or your district. Did you start connecting at that point? Are you connecting at that point? Let's hear from you. And Kenneth or Kyle, just go ahead. Why don't we go to Kenneth first here?
I think that I am probably solidly in really just number 1, and the way that I think that started was just a conversation with students and trying to get them to sort of just communicate with one another through, you know, Google Docs and the chat aspect of that. I think I have my attempts at number 2 have been a little bit stifled simply because what I perceived was what we were talking about earlier is this gap that needs to be overcome with teachers connecting. I still very much live in an email world where that's the preferred mode of conversation, and it gets a little frustrating when you try to get other people on different tools, but my students and I are sort of on the way. I'm thinking a year from now, I really want to be solidly at least in step 3 and then keep the process going. Thanks.
Thank you, Kenneth, for sharing that. We can reflect on that in a minute. I'd like to hear from Kyle. Kyle, if you'd like to chime in, we'd love to hear from you.
Good morning from the East Coast. Can you hear me okay? Okay. I work in a district that uses Blackboard, and so some language arts teachers last year started setting up using their wiki tool as their writing portfolio. And what happened was they kept them all public so that students could read each other's writing and comment back and forth. And it was just really powerful experience for the students because they were putting their work out there. They're getting positive feedback from their peers. They were seeing how other students in the class wrote, and they were getting more ideas about their own writing from that. And so that was really powerful for those teachers to watch that kind of unfold. And so what they did this year was when they set up their Blackboard classes, they merged them all together. So now what's in what we call the honors class, those kids are seeing the writing from all the other students, as are the other students that aren't in the honors classes are seeing the honors classes. And that's been really exciting for them. My favorite comment so far this year was from a student who was editing a piece from another student who refused to edit, and he kind of seemed a little bit of an outburst across the room, said, "Dude, can you please edit?" And so suddenly that other kid who, when the teacher was prompting to edit, would never ever do it, because now he wanted to know where the spell check was, now he wanted to get more feedback on his writing. And so that's something I've seen that's been pretty exciting, just that classroom, within the classroom level.
That is an excellent example, Kyle. Thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate that. Norman had a hand up. I want to go to Norman to hear from him, please.
Hi. How are you all? I hope you can hear me. I really believe the first thing you have to do is make sure that your whole environment connects to the wireless. And once you can do that, once you can find a place for students to just connect to, all you have to do when they walk into the classroom, and this can be dangerous to your job security, I'm the first to admit that, but you simply tell them that you have a connectable device in your pocket, take it out and connect it. And then you're all talking to each other. And you have to be unafraid. Cities can be very dangerous places, yet we all walk in them. The internet can be a very dangerous place, but we can't be afraid to walk in it. And we have to pick students up when they fall and not direct them to places where they won't trip. That's all. Thanks. How do I turn you off?
There you go, we got it. Let's go to Kenneth with a follow-up there. Go ahead, Kenneth. And again, just want to remind everybody to raise your hand if you want to chime in. We'll make sure that you get the mic. A great conversation going on here.
The way my district sort of has really let us experiment with mobile devices, and to me, I find it just wonderful that I basically have really a one-to-one situation. That's at least 90% true. But you have to talk to the kids, and I think these are the opportunities when you talk about the dangers of the internet. You know, that there are some dangers, but it's mostly can be productive. And what I've done is try to share sort of those lessons and what I'm trying to do in the classroom with parents, and I talk with them about it in parent conferences. I've had sessions where parents have come up in the evening so we can just really take an honest look at those so-called dangers. And I think once you do that and you explain to administrators, you explain to parents, and most importantly, explain to the kids, it really sort of takes off. So I don't look at it as a dangerous world anymore, just a world full of opportunities, basically. Thanks.
Again, these are some great points, and one of the things that comes to mind for me is the opportunities provided by global collaboration and using technology in the classroom are just so numerous that connecting your class or connecting as a teacher, connecting your students, you know, enriches them in so many ways, and especially in terms of providing them sort of a structured, scaffolded way of exploring the world and the internet and things like that, and sort of as a way of teaching them how to behave as responsible digital citizens. And I think this is a huge point, and I think it makes it vital. And, you know, we're missing out if we're not taking advantage of these opportunities to help our kids learn. And global collaboration and connecting with other classes is a great way to do that. I'm going to hand it over to Julie here.
Thanks, Ben. I'm just referring to the taxonomy of global connection, which is on page 55 in the book, and this this diagram actually went through a couple of evolutions. We actually had the triangle upside down at one stage, until we realised that in fact, the typical of Bloom's taxonomy, of course, that the tip of the triangle, the smaller part, is really where we want people to achieve that, but not that many people do achieve it, the level five. So we have to, you know, make sure that the pointy bit of the triangle was at the top, because that's the hardest to achieve, but also the higher order thinking skills that we wanted people to get there. So level five, of course, is student to student with student management. Now, the only project that we run with Flat Classroom is actually the NetGenN project, where we have student managers. And that's something that we're also reflecting on in terms of, you know, why don't we run more projects with student managers, and why don't we actually allow students to connect more higher level ways in our global projects, you know, not just Flat Classroom, but across other projects. So that's something to think about, and I throw it open to the floor once again. How do you actually organise this? What has to happen beforehand? Do you have to put your students through other projects before they actually get the confidence to manage a project as students? Or what? I mean, do you agree with this? That's really the highest level. I'd be interested in your comments on this. Thanks.
Yes, that is a great question. We'd love to hear from folks. I had a hand up. Go ahead, Norman.
Yes, I find that if you want students to organize things, what the? Don't show them how to organize things, because that's not organizing things. Let them organize the communication in their own terms. And sometimes that can be a little bit uncomfortable. They come from a different place than we are. They have never, well, most students now, have never been alive without these things. And so they approach them in much different ways than, well, old people like me do it. And you have to just let them. I mean, I just remember from the old days, it's power to the people, and they are the people. That's all. Thanks.
Great points, I think, too, in terms of how student-directed these projects can become, and how that's another one of the powers of connecting your class. I think it's got this onion effect here. We're peeling away more and more pieces and finding bigger and better things that you can do with your classes. I think, too, a comment that Kenneth made earlier, I wanted to kind of come circle back to that, but this idea that he was setting some goals for the coming school year, and I think a nice thing about the graphic there that we've been talking about again on page 55 is that you can sort of see where you are and start thinking about where you want to go and how you want to get there. And I think there's huge value in working at level one and level two as well. So let's pass it back to you guys and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, Kenneth.
Well, just, you know, back to this whole thing of student leadership. I mean, that I think is the goal. But I'm finding right now that the students that I sort of selected for the flat classroom project that we're in now were really sort of student leaders, very independent, very much wanting to you know, take the lead, but they are in a state of confusion right now that they don't really understand what to do, and so they are looking to me for those answers. What I've tried to do to set this up is to create the environment the whole year anticipating this flat classroom participation and in trying to give them freedom to do things that they want to do in a way that they do it. And it's been a real battle to try to get kids to, you know, accept that the answer is yes. If you want to do something different, do it. But they don't get that in the rest of their classes. They are very, very much directed, and that's a real problem. It's taken me several months to get to where kids are feel like, well, you know, Mr. Jones says it's okay, so we'll go ahead and try this, and it's been a real battle. So I'm learning as I go along about how to scaffold these global connections, and I thought I was at a certain place, and then I'm finding out, no, I'm not. I'm still having to really sort of figure out and learn, and when the kids see me learning along with them, that is the beauty of it all. So, thanks.
And this idea that it doesn't go right the first time always, and not giving up and persevering through some of the challenges that projects like these bring about. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it, and every time you undertake something like this, there's stuff to walk away from. So powerful comments there about the teacher as a learner level, you know, in a way that you can model that learning for students. So I think finding your spot there on the taxonomy is important. Figuring out where you want to go, setting some goals, what do you want to do? An interesting question came across there from Michael about elementary age students, and I don't know how many elementary age teachers we have here, but I am certainly one. I'm curious to know, and maybe this is for Michael or maybe for Julie or Vicky, what do you think about elementary age kids working up that taxonomy? How high could a fourth or fifth grader get on that list? I'd love to hear some thoughts on that. I think it goes back to the idea of, you know, coaching them and preparing them to do that. I feel like I certainly have fifth graders who could take on some extra roles, but you have to teach them how to do that. And if they, and this is the problem with any grade, I think, if they haven't been taught how to take on those roles, if they haven't been taught how to work in a student-centered environment, if that hasn't been ingrained as part of your school culture, it increases the amount of work that you have to do with them, and the more we can do that, the better. So we're looking at about 15 minutes left here. We have had quite a bit of discussion, but I did want to turn it to the flat classroom 15 here, because chapter 3 is the first time that it's come up. And I'm wondering if anybody in here is taking on those challenges. In this chapter, challenge 1 is setting up the RSS reader, and challenge 2, setting up the blog. And challenge 3 is to do some research and reflection there. Is anybody taking those on, or has anybody recently done any of those things and maybe has some tips for us? We've got a hand here from Kenneth. Go ahead, please.
The 15 I recently completed in the flat classroom certified teacher course this summer, and I was just tweeting with Vicki this weekend. I went to the, you know, Barnes & Noble and sat down and was really looking through chapter 3 and all that, and I just thought to myself how much easier my life would have been had I had their book to go through and then be able to do the 15. So I'm planning on trying to get some of my colleagues that have expressed an interest in doing that, showing them this book and saying, look, you know, this is sort of a step-by-step guide and it won't be near as hard. I think me stumbling through a lot of these things, I learned a lot, but it was very discouraging at times, and I think this book is just a fabulous tool that people should be able to really use and do it, you know, like a step-by-step manual. Thanks.
And I think conversations like these are important, too, because we're able to talk to each other and learn from each other. For example, in the last session, I can't remember who said it, but they were talking about the importance of the teacher Skype planning meetings and how important these are. And that's something I had never thought about, really, is how important it is to build those relationships between the teachers, too. And so I think just the power of these conversations and the power of Twitter and the power of this book really make that all happen. Norman had a hand up. Let's go to Norman.
Yeah, it's very important when you do any of these things, especially with kids, to let it go where it wants to go. I was working with a French teacher, was teaching actually an AP French class, and she wanted to set up a blog where there's those response questions on the AP exam where her students could answer the questions that she gives them. And the whole blog was to be in French. And it was. And I don't know if it was on purpose, but we neglected to check the private box in Blogger. And so the blog was public to the world. And the students actually liked this so much that they took over the blog, and when I say took over, what I mean is they went way beyond the questions the teacher was asking, and it was still all in French. And suddenly, after a time, we started getting connections, from all over the world, from French-speaking people. And it opened my eyes to the idea that you can plan too much. Let it go where it wants to go. I mean, within reason, of course. That's all. Thanks.
And that is a terrific story, Norman. And again, another one of those things, too, that you sort of sometimes accidentally discover as you go along with projects like this. I'm going to pass it over to Julie, or go ahead, Julie.
Norman, that was a great story. But just looking at, you know, Chapter 3, again, just to refer people back to the case examples of global collaboration at the end of the chapter. And two very special friends of ours, Mia Salam Al-Busaidi, who's based in Oman, his story of connection, the way he's connected, he's actually connected Oman to the world, you know, through Flat Classroom, not just Flat Classroom, he's also a very big IERN participant, International Education and Resource Network participant. He's done projects with kids with them as well. And also our friend who's currently based in Bangkok, Chrissy Hallier. And now Chrissy was a teacher sitting in New Zealand, just sort of, you know, what's this Web 2.0, I'm not sure what's happening here. And she just connected herself to the world, ended up getting an international teaching position in Bangkok, and is just an amazing supporter and participant in Flat Classroom. And you know, it's through these connections that people's lives have changed, and I think this is an important point to make, that by, you know, actually participating in connection, you can make things happen for yourself and for other people. Over to you.
Thanks, Julie. That's a huge takeaway there about the change that you can impact on yourself and others. I'm going to pass it to Vicki here.
You know, as we talk about the challenges, I mean, I didn't really realize what this term was. I usually read about a book or two a week, and so right now my book of the week is The Power of Habit, and it talks about the keystone habits, the habits that really change everything. For example, people who make their beds every morning tend to hold to a budget better. They don't really know why, but the simple self-discipline of making your bed rolls over into other things. Families that eat together tend to have kids that have better grades and are more stable. They don't really know why it is, but that seems to be a keystone habit. And I think that we have to get to the keystone habits, and that's what I hopefully the Flat Classroom 15 did. But I wanted to point something out just as a food for thought kind of aside here. And it talks about what is the keystone habit for students. And this is location 2207 of The Power of Habit. It says at the core of that education is an intense focus on all-important habit, willpower. Dozens of studies show that willpower is the single most important keystone habit for individual success. In 2005 study, for instance, researchers from the University of Pennsylvania analyzed 164 eighth grade students, measuring their IQs and other factors, including how much willpower the students demonstrated as measured of tests by their self-discipline. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm skipping down. It says, self-discipline predicted the academic performance more robustly than did IQ. Self-discipline also predicted which students would improve their grades over the course of school year, whether it's IQ did not. Self-discipline has a bigger effect on academic performance than does intellectual talent. And so much of what we're saying, we're talking about the self-discipline of teachers. Are we going to connect? Are we going to have the habits of connecting? Are we going to do this? And that's what, you know, that's what the Flat Classroom 15 is of course about. But it's also bigger than that. I just want to give you that challenge. Do we have the self-discipline to be able to integrate these things into our lives and into our day and to connect with others and to help others connect? So just a thought for you, and a little aside there.
Yes, that is fascinating stuff, and also opens up a whole new can of worms. You know, can you teach self-discipline, or is it It's just something you either have or you don't. Can you empower students to be self-disciplined? How can you, do you hire only self-disciplined teachers? Things like that. We are coming up on time to go here, and there's so much to talk about. I'm really enjoying the conversation here. Michael had a hand up. I want to pass to Michael here before we run out of time.
Thanks, Ben. I suppose I just want to pull it back a bit. There's a section in this chapter on teacher entrepreneurs, teachers who sort of have dreams and then take them and try and make it into reality. That section of the book really struck home to me. I got a bit lost in some of the push and pull factors, but I suppose as many of the things that I've learnt the hard way over the last few months. But that ability of teachers to take risks and take the become responsible for your own learning and for your students' development. I found really fascinating. Just wondered if anyone else wanted to comment on that.
Yes, that is a term that seems to be gaining ground, and it did speak to me as well, this idea of teacherpreneurship. Did anyone want to talk about that? I know Norman had a hand up when I got to him before, but did anybody have thoughts on being a teacherpreneur? Okay, in the meantime, I'm going to go, I've just got a hand up there. Go ahead and weigh in on that, please. I've lost track of my hands here. Norman, did you have a comment before we go?
Yes, I did. One of the ways that I found to encourage, if you would, people to connect with each other, both faculty, students, and people outside the school. I walked into class one day. I still have no idea why I did this. I looked at the class and I said, from now on, we're paperless. And I've done that in every class since for the last 10 years. And it works wonderfully. People connect to each other. Because I have no choice. That's it.
Thank you. Yeah, sometimes those connections, you have to nudge things yourself to nudge people in that direction. We did want to share with you some information. Chrissy, I don't think, joined us this morning, but she was quoted in case study 7. We did hear from Honor, so make sure you follow those folks on Twitter, as well as Julie and Vicky. We're on there at Engaging Ed, and the hashtag has been very active, but we'd love to see some more comments regarding the book on their questions, comments, etc. with the flat class hashtag. I see some more Twitter handles going on there. If you have yours, make sure you save it, or make sure you put it in the chat there. We'd love to see that. I know I'm following Michael and some of you, but I'd love to add the rest of you as well. I've been blogging pretty regularly on all topics, but if you check out our blog at engagingeducators.com/blog, I've been reflecting. I reflected last week on a question that came up, and we'd love to have a discussion that way. My calendar says the next meeting is Sunday, March 25th at 6 p.m. Eastern. I'll be discussing Chapter 4, which is all about communication, another huge piece. And again, feel free to share your comments in the meantime on Twitter on any chapter. But thank you so much for everybody joining in. Really appreciate that. Wanted to get one last comment in here from Kenneth. Really appreciated that. I thought this was tremendous. Thanks, everybody.
I just wanted to make sure I'm having difficulty. Where are the links to this book club? Because I woke up in plenty of time this morning, but Vicky sent it to me over Skype. Is there a place where they are sent out regularly so that I don't have to wonder how to get there? Thank you.
The link is the same every week. You can bookmark the link. But I've been sending out through MailChimp and then a link through MailChimp, also through the hashtag. And then the podcasts are available on Podomatic. There's a link to that at Flat Classroom Book. But you can use the same link every week, and we'll put the link on there. It's just sometimes if you put the link on a public site, you'll get just people coming in and doing mess in your room or trying to get into your room. So anyway, it just causes server issues sometimes. So, but we can post it up there as well.
Okay, well, I hope everybody has a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Thank you, everybody, for joining in. Really appreciate that. Have a great evening or morning, and take care, everybody.